Killing Innovations podcast for Wednesday, October 12th, 2005. Brought to you from Miami, Florida and Palo Alto, California. Show number 31. Hello, and welcome to the Killer Innovations podcast. I'm your host, Phil McKinney. Before we get started, please keep in mind that the information and opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone, and do not necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers. Well, I apologize for the show being so late. It is Wednesday. If you're a regular listener, you know that I try to get these out on Sunday on a pretty regular schedule. It's been a while since I've kind of fallen off the wagon, but kind of had a crazy travel schedule going from San Francisco to Miami for the weekend, and then turned around and coming back Miami back to San Francisco 2 days later. The reason I was in Miami was my son was competing in the North America Cup for fencing. He actually won the bronze medal, a little fatherly bragging rights here. So needless to say, it was a pretty exciting weekend and kind of threw me off track for getting all the podcast material pulled together. So as a result of all of that, that's what's delayed the recording. And then once I got back to San Francisco, no broadband access or crazy schedule here. So it's now Wednesday afternoon here in Palo Alto. I actually wrote the podcast out while I was on the flight, but just haven't had a chance to really sit down and record it. So first off, thanks for the feedback. Keep it coming. I'm slowly digging out from the email backlog, particularly the backlog that caused when I went to New Orleans for 6 days. It's amazing what the impact is when you drop off the grid for 6 days and now have to find a way to dig yourself out of that backlog. But please rest assured that I will respond. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can email me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. You can always leave me a voicemail feedback message at 703-636-4460, or you can Skype me at phil_mckinney. First off, I want to welcome new listeners of the podcast. The Killer Innovations podcast was highlighted on the front page of iTunes podcast page under business, and as a result, we saw the total subscriber base triple in the last 2 weeks. So there's a lot of new listeners who are just joining in to the podcast. The bad news is this is show 31. That means that there's roughly 15 hours of past shows that new listeners may want to listen to in order to catch up. And so in particular, many listeners go back to listen to the killer question of the week, which is the last segment of every show. So to help the new listeners, let me provide you with at least a little bit of background to help you get a point of reference about the structure of the show and some common terms that you may hear. First off, the most common question that I get is, what is a killer innovation? Well, a killer innovation is a significant and highly profitable departure from current offerings or practices that will be difficult to imitate. So again, killer innovation is a significant and highly profitable departure from current offerings or practices that would be difficult to imitate. What do we mean by significant? It must be easily recognized as being something unique, an idea, a unique approach. It's not just an extension of what exists today. You know, changing the color from blue to red is not significant. Second, it must be highly profitable. As the saying goes, you're either a business or a charity. There are many ideas, but few ideas that can create entirely new industries and markets with profit streams that creates growth, jobs, and economies. And third, it has to be difficult to imitate. You have to create some kind of a competitive advantage around this innovation, whether that be intellectual properties, trade secrets, or a unique combination of skills and expertise and knowledge that you have that would be very hard for any of your competitors to duplicate. So again, a killer innovation is a significant and highly profitable departure from current offerings or practices that will be difficult to imitate. The second piece that you may hear about, or at least in the context of the show, we talk about weak signals. And what is it? What do we mean by weak signals? A weak signal is an early pattern, market movement, trend, fad, that could be an early alert that there's a new opportunity about to emerge. And it's your ability really to keep your finger on the pulse of your industry and look for these weak signals that will allow you to create new ideas, new killer innovations. And then third, killer questions. And you'll find that in all the podcasts that I talk about, you'll find that there's a killer question at the end of every podcast show. And the reason why I focus so much on structuring of killer questions is that over with my experience and time that I've done these workshops and work for companies where my task is to innovate and create new products, new technologies, new offerings to the marketplace, the difference between a good idea and a great idea is in the quality of the question that was posed. And so therefore, very simple questions such as, let's go create a new product that we can ship into North America. Weak question, you're going to get weak ideas. If you restructure those questions into a series of sessions that talk about, for instance, one being, you know, what is it that our customers find difficult about assembling our product? That's a very well-structured question, and it forces you to look beyond the obvious. So again, we talked about killer innovation, weak signals, and the killer questions of the week. Each show, I'll normally present three segments. Segment one is a discussion about the how of creativity and innovation. Segment two, we'll talk about emerging weak signals, or periodically I'll also replace segment two with kind of a little bit of a historical look back to leading innovators and how they came up with their ideas. So we've covered Black & Decker, L.L. Bean, J.W. Marriott, which is kind of funny given that I'm sitting inside of a Marriott Courtyard Hotel here in Palo Alto. And then segment three is always the killer question of the week. So now that you have at least some background on the structure of the podcast and the whole concept behind killer innovations, let's move on to the content for this week. So segment one, stealth innovation. 2 weeks ago in the podcast, we talked about overcoming your idea critics. You know, these are the people who want to throw cold water onto the ideas that you're working on. And these are the people who typically can't come up with their own idea, but they're the first ones to try to talk about how your idea is not a good one, it's impractical, can't be done, already been done, etc. But this week I got an email from Bill, who forwarded a copy of an e-newsletter from Ron May called The May Report. Ron May is a Chicago technology and entrepreneur reporter. In this particular issue that Bill sent me from Ron May, it was discussing the background and the success of Motorola's Razr phone. Now, talk about the ultimate in getting around your idea critics. Ron points out, or at least he presents a story, can't validate if this is true. I do not have any knowledge directly from Motorola, but let's just assume that Ron's report is correct. Ron points out, or at least claims, that the Razr was developed by one engineer and his team. It wasn't a big organization of 500 people with marketing and all that. One engineer and a small team came up and developed the Razr phone. But the most important fact is that the Razr phone was built by this team after it was rejected by Motorola executives. And the team went stealth. They presented the original idea. Motorola management said, nope, not a good idea, don't pursue it. At that point, this engineer and his team went underground. They hired their own ODE, or outsourced data engineering partner, and these are typically companies located in Taiwan, Korea, China, in the Asia-Pacific region. And these are companies that you go to when you have an idea, a concept of a new device, and they will actually then go build the prototype and then prepare the designs and everything to be manufactured. So in this case, after the Motorola executive said no, this team went stealth, they hired their own ODE, and off they went. It's interesting, though, that Ron points out that now that the Razr has proven to be so successful, Motorola executives are lighting up trying to lay claim that they were the ones who greenlighted the program and who supported this stealth activity. But it's important to look at why was the original idea rejected? You know, what was the idea critics' point as to why they didn't want the idea to move forward? Well, one was is lack in feature function compared to competitors. And this is where a lot of large existing corporations run into problems. They tend to want to create these what we call function matrix. So basically list out all the feature functions for a particular type of device, in this case, a mobile phone. Across the top, you list all your competitors and you put checkboxes in each one of those checks. Now your objective is to cover off all of your competitors' functions and to have some that your competitors have not thought of or not available in their product. But this assumes that more feature functions is exactly what the users wanted. In this case, though, the engineering team that was developing the Razr said, nah, we're not going to focus on feature function. We're going to focus on design. So when you look at the Razr, it's really sleek, very thin, easy to put in your pocket. Some people would claim easy to lose, but it's really focused is strong on design and not on feature functions. And the key there is that management couldn't get over the fact that you were going to be shipping a phone that when you laid out feature functions was less than the competitors. So when they got rejected by the management team, the Motorola executive went out, they hired their own ODE firm in China to do the prototype work. Once they got it to a prototype stage and can prove the function and have something to actually show management and to just show customers for feedback, that was when they came back in and showed it to management. Now, when you think about doing stealth programs, and let me speak from experience. Prior to my current role, I was a chief information officer at a telecommunications company. And coming into the organization, it was a new organization, and there was some software systems that we needed to build, but it became obvious that it was not going to be built inside the existing culture. And we needed to get some really innovative thinking, and we needed to bring in some outside expertise and outside resources. So we actually did that entire project in stealth, meaning we didn't have the employees even know that the team existed so they wouldn't be distracted by it. We didn't let senior management get involved from the standpoint of getting into a design by committee, because once the senior management or any kind of management gets involved, then everybody has an opinion on what it should look like and how it should be done. So we created a very small team, we empowered them to do it, and we kept it purely in stealth mode. Now, be careful not to misinterpret what I'm saying here. What I'm not saying is that everyone should just ignore management. Please don't misinterpret that. One, I'm part of management in my current role, so don't ignore me if you work for the same company I do. But at the same time, management doesn't always have the right answer, particularly if it's management teams that tend to be more operationally or more administrative focused rather than technology or customer focused. In many cases, management are so tied up just doing their day-to-day tasks, they don't have an opportunity really to look up off the desk and be out in the field talking with customers and really understanding what the needs and wants of the marketplace. So again, I'm not saying that everyone should just ignore management, but also at the same time recognize that we don't always have the right answer. So in this case, stealth is not a bad thing. It's not a standpoint if you're trying to be a renegade. It can be an effective means to get your product or idea through the process inside your business and get it out into the market. So what are the basic constructs of going stealth? Keep it quiet. And in this case, keep it quiet until you have momentum. And what I mean by momentum is you've got something tangible to show. You've taken the project far enough down to where, maybe it's the 75% mark, maybe it's the 80% mark, where you're over the hump, you've proven out all the key features that are the technologies that need to be there, or features or markets, whatever the key criteria for success is. So you've got enough momentum to where once you do show it to somebody, they can see the very last few steps that are needed to really commercially launch this. So keep it quiet until you have momentum. Second is the thing that I've learned with stealth innovation is get an outside customer excited. As you're going through the process of building this, and you'll see it in the gate milestone maps, if you've downloaded that from the previous podcast, I think it was like show 15, 16, 17, something in that range, where we talked about gate milestones. In the gate milestone process that's available for download, if you go to the KI community site, you can, you'll see in the gate milestone where I propose you always bring customers in early. Well, this is a case in the stealth mode, bring a customer in early, get them involved, and get them excited about what it is you're building, such that when you do go show it to management, you can bring that customer with. So it's not just, here's this really cool phone, but oh, by the way, here's a customer or market segment or partner who is really excited about this, and therefore reduces the risk of management to give you the green light to move forward. And the key thing with stealth is, you know, if you're truly a believer and you have the passion, trust your gut. This is not going to be something that you can prove out and do the analytics and fully understand what all the ins and outs are going to be. This is a gut check. When you're talking about innovation, you may not have the ability to prove out all the market studies and prove out exactly what it's going to be capable of doing and what the market size is going to be and what the revenue potential is. But if you truly, truly believe, if your gut is saying that this is that killer innovation and you've got that passion, then you know, you have that. You need to have that intellectual honesty then to do whatever it takes to bring it out. Now, at the same time, if you do stealth innovation against your management's directions, you also need to be prepared to take the consequences, which means you need to be willing to say, okay, if I truly go against management and management decides to really, you know, stomp on the effort, then you've got to be willing to either fight it, take it outside, or fold up the effort. In this case, though, if you keep it quiet and do this and develop the technology and get to a certain part, this is one way to show management what the value of having these kinds of innovative programs funded and operating within the organization. So again, I want to be very clear. I'm not saying that everyone should just ignore management. There are times, though, that management is wrong. And if you've got the means and the structures and the capabilities to go stealth, stealth is a valid option to take your idea forward to the point where management can have a more tangible understanding of what your idea is, and you can potentially bring a customer alongside and therefore endorse your effort. Moving on to segment two, weak signals. This last week, with all the time I've been spending on airplanes, I was reading the most recent issue of Business 2.0, which was talking about the top 10 trends. Interesting, though, that Business 2.0 also listed the trends that you should ignore. Kind of a what I would refer to as maybe a negative weak signal. Some of these negative weak signals that was in the Business 2.0 issue were things like podcasting. That kind of hit a little close to home. Their view on podcasting is that there's really no business model. Well, in my case, there is no business model. I'm not doing this podcast to drive revenue or provide customer streams to a business or anything like that. My purpose of the podcast is simply just to share with you kind of the scars and lessons learned in through my career of trying to create and innovate new kinds of ideas and products. A second one kind of that Business 2.0 said to ignore was space tourism. They believe it's far out in the future and it's still going to be kind of the purview of the millionaire club. Outsourcing. Business 2.0 says that outsourcing should not be a concern. Rote tasks will be outsourced, but outsourcing cannot be applied to those of us in the creative field. And I would classify, if you're listening to this podcast, you're part of that creative field, that new creative economy. Fourth was China's rule over the world, kind of this pessimism that China's going to take over all. Business 2.0 doesn't believe that applies. And then hydrogen-powered vehicles. They believe it's pretty far out, 10 to 15 years. My point here is not the specific trends that Business 2.0 magazine says to ignore. What I'm really talking about here is this whole issue of trend watching from publications. Every publication, every consultant, even companies, has this top 10 trend list. Kind of maybe it's everybody's trying to be the David Letterman of the industry. The challenge on trends, though, is they're easy to hype. And the reason they're easy to hype is that so few go back and see if they got it right. Nobody who goes out there and publishes trends, I shouldn't say nobody, very few people who go off and publish trends ever go back and analyze whether or not they got it right. So the question here is then which ones do you believe, or how do you create your own trends to identify new market opportunities? So here's kind of a quick little process that I use when I am trying to identify new market opportunities given a set of trends. So what I do first is I consolidate the variety of lists of trends that have been identified from a variety of publications, magazines, books, websites, analyst reports, Wall Street, newspapers, wherever I can get a list of these of trends, I create a compiled list. I then write them on 3x5 index cards, and I have a huge magnetic whiteboard in my office, and I use magnets to put these index cards up on the whiteboard. And then across the bottom of the whiteboard is a timeline. So 2006, 2010, 2020, 2030, whatever the timeline is that applies to your industry. And then I start positioning these index cards along the timeline that I think, based on, you know, what I've read, what I know of the industry, when do I think these trends are going to appear. Then, for each one of these trends, I back up along the timeline and I identify the key milestones that need to be hit in order for that trend to become a reality. So you can pick any trend, say space tourism to Mars. What are the key milestones that you have to have in place in order for that to become successful? Efficient rockets, the ability to generate water on a foreign planet, you know, food, whatever, communications. What are all those milestones that have to be in place before that trend can become a reality? Then look at each of those milestones and identify, do they exist? Meaning we have technologies and we have means today to solve that milestone, or we don't. There's milestones that we have to achieve, but we haven't fixed it, such as water on a foreign planet. Then for all those milestones that do not have a solution today, you want to break them into two lists. One, the list of milestones that currently have research dollars allocated to them, whether that be federal government dollars, university dollars, private industry dollars, or potentially consortiums of any of those three. The second list are milestones that have little to no research dollars allocated to them. Now, I will tend to focus on those milestones that are in that one category that says that little to no research dollars are being allocated. And when I list out the milestones, the way I list these milestones out is I'm looking for what I call key control points. Meaning if I solve that problem, it's a key problem that everybody is going to have to solve. And if I figure out how to solve it first, it either gives me a competitive advantage or it gives me a unique differentiation, and my competitors will have to come work with me in order to achieve that trend outcome. Okay? So again, the process, consolidate your entire list of all the trends that you're looking at. In my case, I put them on index cards and use magnets and put them on my whiteboard. I put them across the timeline. I reverse the trend. I look for milestones. And then I break down those milestones into two categories, milestones that are technology exists today and milestones that the technology does not exist today. And for that list, I break it down again, looking for milestones where there's research dollars allocated or there's no research dollars allocated. And again, those that do not have research dollars allocated, and it truly is a milestone that has to be hit, that becomes the opportunity. And those are the areas that you should begin running killer innovation workshops on. Moving on to segment three, killer question of the week. It's kind of tied to this trend and how do you identify potential trend areas that could lead to new innovations. So the killer question for the week is, based on a specific trend, what products or services will be needed or desired by each social group? Based on a specific trend, what product or service will be needed or desired by each social group? And the key here is the difference between needs and desires. And you'll find that the needs of a certain social group, whether that be ethnic, geographic, socioeconomic, whatever the social group is, the difference between needs and desires are radically different. So let's use an example of the case of aging population. I've just gone through this with my parents, both who had severe medical problems. Fortunately, my wife is a registered nurse, and God bless her. She gave up her career in order to take care of my parents up until they passed away here a couple of years ago. When you look at the aging population and the situation where you're taking care of your family members, you quickly can see where there's gaps in today's system. So what are some of the needs in the aging population market today? Specialty doctors, because the health needs of the aging are different than the health needs of others. And it's not just gerontology, but they have other specific specialties that we need more medical research in and more areas to work on. The other is nursing homes. In our case, with my wife and children, we volunteer every weekend at two local nursing homes near our home. I should say my wife and kids do. I do it when I happen to be home for that weekend. So we've seen a lot of the issues and challenges in nursing home care. And again, what is it that you need? Let's say if you're on Social Security or you're on some kind of federal funded or government funded medical program, or what do you view as the needs if you're naturally well off and can afford to pay whatever it is you need to pay to get the right kind of medical care? Two different kinds of categories, two completely different sets of needs. In the case of what is it you desire, in the case of aging population, well, a desire may be in-home services, a whole new kind of social services kind of structure, services industry focused on helping the elderly stay in their home, people to do house cleaning, people to do in-home nursing care, people to do home maintenance, but aimed specifically at the aging population. Another desire could be remote elderly monitoring. You know, so if you're an adult child and your parents are still alive, but they live some distance away, using things like RFID tags on the wrist or webcams in the home so that you can keep track of your parents. They can feel their independence, but you're there in the event that they need them. So again, this week's killer question is, based on a specific trend, what product and or services will be needed or desired by each social group? And again, social group can be geographic, ethnic, socioeconomic, career, education level, whatever category you want to apply to the social group. And keep in mind, you're looking for one needs, what are my basic needs, and what are the desires? With that, we're going to wrap things up. Thanks for listening. Please keep the feedback coming. I'm not sure where I'll be next week, most likely back in New Orleans for a few days to wrap up the broadband installations there in New Orleans, where we've gotten an unbelievable positive response from the residents and even government agencies that are using the broadband infrastructure that we put in 2 weeks ago. So we're going to be going back most likely this weekend in order to continue building that out to make it available to even a wider set of residents in New Orleans. And then I'll be heading off to Europe for 2 weeks for meetings there. Please remember to vote for your favorite podcast at Podcast Alley. It's your easiest way to say thanks to the producers of your favorite podcast for all the time and effort they put into putting the material together, recording, and the cost incurred in hosting these podcasts, particularly the bandwidth costs. Please keep the feedback coming. You can email me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. You can phone, leave a voicemail message at 703-636-4460. And if you leave me a voicemail message, I'll play that in an upcoming podcast. And I apologize if you've left me one here in the last week or two. I have not listened to it as of yet. So I won't play them today, but I'll play them in an upcoming podcast. As always, you can also Skype me at Phil_McKinney. Again, I apologize for the late posting of this podcast. We'll try to get back on schedule so that the new podcast will come up either Sunday or Monday of next week and slowly get it back onto being up on the weekends. If you're not subscribed, get subscribed. Thanks for listening. Get others to subscribe, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.